Papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis of what's going on in American news media these days and how decisions are made in newsrooms with some veteran journalists. I'm Rex Smith from The Upstate American, formerly editor of the Times Union. I'm here in the studio today with Judy Patrick, the former editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady, and our producer, David Gustina, the morning host on WAMC and guy who does a lot of stuff around here.
Capital Connection, Legislative Gazette, this show, morning show, teaching at University of Albany. But we're all busy.
Yeah. Well, what's on your mind today? What do you think we need to talk about today?
I don't know about this whole idea of neutrality. You know, I don't believe that we can be neutral in this particular moment, nor do I think there's objectivity ever. But the idea that we can't call a lie, and a liar, because it goes against some code of objectivity or neutrality in journalism is bunk.
Well, there he goes. Judy, what's on your mind today?
Well, the bunk on my mind, you know, is the fact that the notion that we in journalism have loved crime stories. I mean, they're easy to do. We play them up, but and we hate good news. I mean, you know, we'll put it on the front page. It'll get a few likes and et cetera. But, you know, diehard journalists tend to hate the good stories and love the crime stories. And why is that? And is that doing our communities justice?
Well, I think that's a really good point. And I want to just actually cite a statistic that I just read today as we were speaking about from Popular Information, which is a fine reader-supported newsletter that I get. Here's an interesting fact that I'll bet our listeners don't know. While 64% of Americans believe that crime increased last year across the country, they're wrong. In fact, not only did overall crime drop in 2024, but crime fell in 24 across every category and population group, down in all seven categories of crime across all 10 population groups. In fact, violent crime and property crime were at their lowest level last year since the 1960s. But people don't believe that. Two-thirds of Americans think that crime increased. And is that because of the way we cover crime? Is that because it is a staple of American journalism? And in any case, here's the other question that I think we need to grapple with. How do we deal with good news? How do we deal with reporting this very fact that crime, in fact, is at the lowest level since the 1960s, when we have a president who is saying he may send the National Guard in and take over Washington, D.C., because crime there is rampant. It's a dirty city that is run by criminals, none of which is true. How do you report good news, in effect?
You know, I'm seeing those Donald Trump stories right now, and they will make the point that crime is down 26% in Washington, D.C., but it doesn't come until the sixth or seventh graph, which is too late. I remember, I mean, we have covered these trends about lowered crime rate, and as editors on the desk, they see the stories come over the transom, and they think, oh, it's not down. There was a robbery yesterday. There's a murder today. It's hard for us to believe. And also, let's not forget that crime stories are easier to do than, you know, political stories or major issue stories. And it gets a lot of interest from our reading or our listening public. But it does offer our communities a distorted perception of where they are.
Yeah, because it goes a lot further than just crime, Rex Smith and Judy Patrick. For crying out loud, Rex, for how many years on this program are you saying, well, we don't cover the planes that land safely at Albany Airport. We cover the one that crashes. That's right, because our criteria for what makes news is skewed. It's skewed toward the negative. And more people will watch the plane crash than will watch the plane land safely.
Is that not human nature, though?
It is human nature, but we are adding our own mark onto it by making it seem every night on the nightly news and in your newspaper that the world is collapsing around us. And while there are some evidence, climate change and other things, that some bad things are really happening, to the level that people interpret crime is well beyond what it really is because of the criteria that we use that tells us what news is.
You could say that. In fact, you just did.
I did.
But the fact of the matter is news tends to be a departure from the ordinary, a departure mm-hmm. from what is typical. And typically in America, we lead a pretty safe life.
We have so shouldn't we life. Be reporting that?
How do you report the mundane? How do you report what
a
is negative.
You take it out of a for-profit model.
Oh.
And you stop making it about making it more. How do you say?
Is profit the word? Is it that does WAMC report how good things are as opposed to
absolutely.
The departures from the ordinary?
We do a lot more in-depth pieces on the state of the world, and many times they often are examples of good things that are happening. And we tend in public broadcasting to try to look at the larger instances of. Person against person, person against the world. How does it impact the community? Not just seeing the guy in handcuffs.
Hey, you know, my eyes glaze over when I see those stories about, you know, cats getting rescued from trees or...
Not me.
You know, the fun time at the carnival. I'm just not interested. It's fluff. And we called it fluff in the business.
But what if the fluff is the majority of the things that are going on?
Well, and again, the people who go to the fair, are they interested in actually reading about, you know, how much the cotton candy costs this year or the deep fried Oreo? I'm not sure that they are.
They want to see the pictures.
I think it just fills our papers up. Yeah, they want to see the photos.
I'm not sure you can deal with the reality of the human tendency to look for the negative, which is, I think, arises from our heritage of being fearful. After all, the saber-toothed tiger was chasing us down in the forest. So we genetically are predisposed to have to look at the things that we fear. So I don't know how you deal with that in a news medium if you ignore the bad news.
You know, one of the problems with that federal data is that it's old. I mean, we get it, and it's like 2 years old because they take so long to generate the data. You know, probably you're checking to make sure it's accurate before they release it.
Well, I'm sure it's not going to be now because if the FBI is saying that violent crime and property crime are at the lowest level since the 1960s, that doesn't square with Donald Trump's agenda. And we know that Donald Trump has installed loyalists and that if you don't agree with him, he fires the people who run and give him the news that he doesn't like.
Yes.
So I expect that Kash Patel's FBI, Don Bongino's FBI, is next year going to report that crime is bad. Well, but that would look bad for Donald Trump, wouldn't it?
No, they're going to go back and turn the knobs a little bit and change the numbers. You know, we're in this situation now where we used to really rely on government data. And now we're worried about that going forward. Although for the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that whole controversy, maybe all along they should have waited a couple of months before releasing their data.
But that is what they do. They put out the immediate data and then they revise it. He didn't like the fact that, well, Trump has just complained about it from the get-go. But they do revise it. And it's just that the businesses appreciate having the information right away. I don't think the right solution is to sit on information that you have.
Tell that to the person who ran the BL.
Yeah. Who got fired. Yeah, absolutely. I do think that journalists increasingly are going to have to be skeptical about the information that is coming from the government that we have previously trusted. Good journalists have been skeptical from the get-go.
Yeah, skeptical 2.0.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And because of what's happening. And therein lies the neutrality aspect here, because anything we say that's negative about this president right now is seen as subjective, as mean-spirited, as biased, when in fact, we are doing our best to tell the truth through our reporting and analysis.
Right. That kind of criticism puts you on the defensive, too, and makes you not say what's real. And what if, for example, the president is calling for a new census? when the Constitution says you do a census every 10 years. I mean, you have to call that out for this is against the Constitution, this is wrong, this is beyond his powers, and go through the whole mechanism of what he's trying to do and why. We're not sounding the alarm the way we should, I think, by treating this, again, it's more than sane washing at this point. It's lie washing or untruth washing.
It's acquiescence because of fear.
Well, I suppose that's true. I suppose the fear, what? The fear of your listeners, your readers, your viewers turning you off because they think that you're biased. Is that it?
Well, and just the fear coming from Washington that you'll be attacked, you'll be sued, your money will be taken away. We better just get in line for the moment and do what they say. I mean, look what's happened at the Washington Post.
Well, that's the fault of a chicken-hearted owner. frankly.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about.
But it's not the journalists. And actually, the Washington Post is still doing fine reporting. But the difficulty is, of course, the opinion page has now come to reflect perhaps a libertarian point of view, at least a conservative point of view. And a lot of people, a lot of veteran reporters are taking the buyouts because
yes.
they just believe that the paper has lost its direction.
I think we're saying the same thing. The pressure is coming from the top. Some journalists are getting out because they're not going to kowtow, and others may.
Yeah. I think that most reporters would be very happy to tick off the president of the United States or the governor of New York
State.
Most. Yeah.
Not many in the White House press room.
Well.
He's calling on.
Well, those that he's calling on.
Other than Caitlin Collins.
There are a lot of strong reporters who are doing good, aggressive work, but they get shouted down and their point of view is not heard because of the way that people digest the information because of the sources being so divided because...
You're a terrible reporter. Your news organization is fake news.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the kinds of things they get when they ask a sharp, important, pointed question.
Well, there was a survey that said that Democrats and Republicans, they can't even agree on the facts at this point.
Exactly.
I mean, the earth is round. There are certain things that are facts.
Republican and Democratic voters cannot agree on basic facts. Actually, that's what people believe. 80% of U.S. adults say that they not only disagree on plans and policies, but they also can't agree on basic facts. And it's not just that they're interpreting the same information differently. The fact is they're getting different information. If you watch Fox News, you would believe that, well, for example, that the left and that Democratic politicians are all inflamed about the Jeans ad that Sidney Sweeney recorded, that now some people on the left were upset about this, I have good genes. But Democratic politicians have not, in fact, been talking about it. But Fox News, after hitting that story day after day after day, I would say, so they can put more sexually suggestive content on the air, which is attractive to viewers. But they've been hitting that by claiming that Democrats are up in arms about it. In fact, they're not. So Fox will distort the news intentionally in order to create controversy, to generate more viewership, to make their readers happy.
So they distort the information in coordination in many ways with the Trump administration. And the Trump administration just wants more control over all of it.
Yeah.
Whether, as this article from CNN says, climate change reports deleted, DEI initiatives banned, local TV and radio stations defunded. He's going after every aspect when it comes to the idea that information is power and he wants the power over it. You just mentioned the labor statistics and all the information that he is claiming hold over and wants to be in charge of telling his story the way he wants it. How can we then report that without skepticism 2.0?
Well, you do need to be skeptical. Journalists have always been told to be skeptical, but increasingly we have to be willing to label a lie as a lie. It still makes it difficult to structure stories. It just makes storytelling difficult because not only for the people who are reading news stories, but to try to reach people who are basically news illiterate, people who are tending to get their news from social media. Structuring content so that you can get across some of these difficult nuances so that you can explain to people that what they're being told isn't true, that's a real challenge.
Yeah, and more communities will have virtually no news, legitimate news at all. I mean, you had an article you sent, Judy, about the village without a newspaper. Was that you?
Rex.
Oh, Rex.
And what happened was a woman involved in the community stepped up and started to write about it instead and has, stepped into the void and provided the important content they needed for that small town. You know, there are so many small towns, small school districts, that are lacking this accountability. We've never, even in the golden age of newspapers, we were never able to cover most of them, but man, at least we tried. Nowadays, even some of the bigger school districts or bigger towns, bigger cities are not being covered the way they should be, and we're relying on government regulators to step in. Maybe the General Accounting Office, maybe the in New York State, we have the Comptroller's Office does some of this, but nothing compensates for having a reporter lurking in the back of the room with a notepad in hand.
Yeah, I think we made note on this show a few weeks ago of a population 400,000 city between Dallas and Fort Worth that basically has no news coverage because they're too far from either the Dallas Morning News, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. There's no television that really goes into this community. And so if you have a community of 400,000 that isn't well covered, or, when I was a young reporter on Long Island for Newsday, I covered a town of 450,000 people, a town of Brookhaven. There were four reporters assigned to cover that town. There is not a single reporter now who is assigned to cover that community. It's sort of a rotating thing. And think of all the news that doesn't get covered in these big communities where, as you say, a lot of school districts, we used to have our newspapers would have stringers who would cover stuff, right?
That's right. That's
when I was the editor of The Record in Troy in the early 90s, I had two dozen stringers who would get paid a big $20 or $25 for going to cover a school
much,
board
Rex?
Meeting.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really terrific. But they were there at the school board meetings, at the town board meetings in places like Averill Park and Hoosick Falls and Pittstown, for heaven's sake. There's no coverage of that these days.
No, and there's an article this week I sent around about Alaska and the idea of these indigenous communities that are covered, a lot of them, by public media. They look at one community here, KBRW, one of 36 tribally licensed public radio stations and four TV stations across the U.S. that rely on CPB funding. They're gone. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting is shutting down. And we're going to see places like the Alaskan village that has 10,000 people where there will be no radio station, probably.
And certainly there's no print, no television, no
nothing.
Content at all, no coverage. This, thanks to the cutback in federal funding. So if there is no media coverage, if there is no news being generated, what you have to hope, I think, and I keep trying to find hope because David, journalists don't always look for the bad news. What you have to hope is that there will be some of these small outlets that will crop up. The one that Judy was referring to, the woman in Scarsdale in Westchester County, where a single person, a woman who watches over this sort of thing herself as a sort of a one-person newsroom. And that's the kind of thing that I'm afraid we have to hope for, that at least there will be some people who will step forward and take it upon themselves to be civic watchdogs.
I'm not hopeful.
But looking back, in a lot of these small towns and cities, there have always been those gadflies that hang around. And, let's hope that they tended to be older people, retired, they had some time on their hands, and they
would, not that there's anything wrong with
not
that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. But they would always go and ask important questions, and they were, really important parts of the public meetings. The question is, will they go the next step and write that up or somehow document what's happened in a way that can be digestible on social media or in some other form? One of the problems, though, nowadays is, we're so fragmented about, do I go to Facebook to find this out? Blue Sky, Twitter, True Social, Instagram. I mean, there's no, the newspaper, the radio station, the TV station. We used to just gather all that together for everybody and make it easy. But now you have to go out and search for your information. I think there's money to be made in somebody who can collate this and bring it back together for us again, because we've taken it apart.
If you're a small practitioner, though, too, how do you deal with the threats that now come your way? How do you deal with the potential for being sued by a public official whom you write about?
Oh, that's where the fear comes in. Mm-hmm. If you're a small place and you're not going to be able to afford the lawsuit, you're more likely, I would say, to acquiesce, to not rock the boat, and to try to coast through it. Whereas those larger organizations, which is what we argue all the time, why is it valuable to have a for-profit institution? Well, many times the large ones, they can afford that lawyer and sue. But what have we been seeing? the opposite.
The large organizations cave to Trump, you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And make their multi-million dollar payments because the president demands it as sort of an extortion racket.
He knows exactly what he's doing and how to hold his hand on their neck until he gets what he wants.
Let's not forget that the idea of a president suing a news organization is very rare. I mean, I can't recall any other president ever doing that. And it's kind of setting the tone for every other public official. Oh, you're not happy with the coverage? File a lawsuit. And it's just beyond the norm.
But that attracts certain people. It's so interesting to me. I talked to a friend recently. He loved all this stuff. I love that he's doing all this stuff, going after the media. They deserve it. And they should be going after the schools. We know what they're doing. And he's doing things that no one's ever done before.
How'd that conversation go, Dave?
Got a little heated.
He is doing things no one's ever done before, which is, again, back to the original topic, what we ought to be reporting. We need to let people
That's
know
right.
how extraordinary this is.
And in some cases, illegal. Legal, arguably, against the Constitution.
You know, and also talk about play, because this issue about how we play crime statistics rise and fall. I mean, the article noted that, you know, it gets downplayed. When crime is up, it's on the front page in 72-point type. When it's down, it gets buried if it gets reported at all. So is it really fair for what we've done? And because I bet if you ask anybody in Washington, D.C. today whether or not crime is up or down, they're going to say it's up.
Yeah, but crime is crime is crime. What is crime that we're talking about? Are we talking about, let's say, an underprivileged neighborhood where crime may be happening? Or are we talking about corporate crime? Yeah. You know, who's impacted by this crime? This would be my decision in terms of how do we cover the news better than just that old criteria we use? Let's look at what the impact of one stabbing in a city overnight. Does that need to be broadcast all over the place? Or is a story about why young people are finding themselves with weapons and in gangs and doing other things, what is it about that situation and why is that occurring here in our community?
I think that's a great story. We've all done it, but it doesn't get the attention of the high impact stabbing. You know, Donald Trump was all upset because one of the people who got beat up was a Doge staffer.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made it newsworthy. It's a Doge staffer beat up in Washington, D.C. It's a single crime, but it got inflated because of who it was, where it occurred. And this makes it more newsworthy. And it's trumpeted then by the President of the United States, who somehow wants to make it known that this is a bad thing, I guess because the city of Washington is run by Democrats.
So the enemy is us, isn't it? Human beings.
Let's criticize our, I mean, if you had a murder of a, in a suburb of a young white blonde girl, that would get far greater play than, you know, a murder in a neighborhood where
or let's just say
low.
A missing blonde
yeah, yeah.
girl or a missing African-American girl.
You know, and we would make the argument, well, that's more unusual. Well, all kidnapped people should be treated equally. All murdered people should be treated equally. If you're going to put one on the front page, let's put them all on the front page.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think that's likely to happen. I mean, I
Nor
think
do I.
That we make people are all humans are created equal, but they aren't necessarily seen as equal in the eyes of their fellow citizens. I'm not arguing that we ought to be giving more attention to a particular individual as opposed to another. But the reality is that we do. We pay attention to a kidnapped heiress, to a murdered millionaire.
Or to a president of the United States.
Or to a president, right. That's true. And it's very hard for us to... It's not only hard, it's again, human nature. We are drawn to certain kinds of things and not to others. And we can't, as a media ecosystem, reflect the way we wish things were. We, to a certain level, need to report what is. And we need to pay some attention to the way our society actually operates.
I love that you use the word heiress. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yeah, that's not a word that we typically... heiress isn't heirs. That's how... Well, that's how CBS News has now come into the hands of somebody. An heir now is running CBS and the whole situation there. And we will see actually what happens now that thanks to, apparently, CBS paying $16 million to Donald Trump. CBS has and Paramount have gone into the hands of David Ellison, the son, the heir. And it will be interesting to see if that what is still referred to often as the Tiffany Network maintains its independence, is still able to generate the kind of hard-hitting reporting that 60 Minutes, for example, has been known for.
I have a feeling the transition from traditional news is far from over, and we're going to see massive change coming in the next 10 years.
So back to the original controversy about neutrality.
Yeah.
You brought that up, David, at the very beginning. And the question is whether, given all the change that's going on in America, given the impact, for example, of tariffs that are going to have a huge impact on the American economy, that are going to cause inflation, that are going to disrupt supply chains, how do we report that kind of thing in a fair way without seeming to be simply aggressive and attacking Donald Trump?
Well, since the Republicans and Democrats can't agree on information, information is being distorted all around us. We have AI creating deepfakes. We're in a really hard place to ever think anyone's going to think we're neutral, nor are we. No one is objective when they report. You come and were born in a certain place, you're a certain gender, you've had certain life experiences that shape who you are. That affects how you write about things and how you see things in the world. We're all subjective. What we use is the criteria for what makes news. We try to be as accurate as we possibly can, and we try to cite those sources clearly and effectively. Neutrality? Bunk.
With that, folks, we would welcome your thoughts, by the way. media@wamc.org is how you would send us email. And we hope you'll do that. And we hope you'll listen again. Judy Patrick has been here. David Gustina. I'm Rex Smith. We thank you for joining us. Hope you come back again next week for the Media Project.
Got a people's fight to wage, ting-a-ling-a-ling newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent
the... The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith. Judy Patrick, former Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.